Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The wind never stopped, and the windows wobbled like they might shatter at any time. The group sat around the fire, not saying anything but all feeling somber at the loss of another group member. They looked to me and waited anxiously for something, anything that I could say to make them feel better. "The good news," I said at last, "is that we found a radio. If we could manage to fix it, we can call for help." No replies. Aya coughed, huddled in the corner with puffy eyes, encased in a cocoon of blankets. "The bad news," I continued, "obviously, is that David is dead." Grace tried to hold in her tears. "And he wasn't killed by a person." Kate furrowed her brow at me. Grace looked up in a sort of bewildered blankness. I've been trying to avoid this, but it's time that you all knew." Beatrice looked down. She knew what I was going to say. "Our stalker isn't human."
"Milo," Kate said, "what are you talking about?"
I rubbed my face in my hands. "It's not human, Kate. The thing that killed David and Joel and Charlie is some kind of animal."
"Bullcrap," Grace stammered.
"It's true," Beatrice said. "I've seen it." "And Aya's seen it too," I signed.
"What is it?" Kate asked. She looked scared.
"I don't know," I admitted. "I haven't gotten a good look at it. Whatever it is, it's smart and it's big."
"And it won't stop until we're all dead,"
Aya muttered. All eyes turned to her.
"It can't be killed. It's only a matter of time until we all end up like my dad."
Her glossy eyes reflected the fireplace.
We're going to be fine," I lied. "We have food and heat, and we have a radio and weapons to protect ourselves with."
Grace bit her fingernails in grief and anxiety.
"I don't understand," she said. "I don't know what's out there."
"Neither do I. Whatever it is, it hasn't tried to get inside."
"Yet,"
Aya said. The group shifted and looked out the window at the snow, but it was too dark. Nothing could be seen more than a few feet. That thing could be anywhere outside. We sat in silence for the better part of an hour, and gradually some of us began to fall into a light sleep. I sat by the glass and watched, thinking about how the window must be the only visible thing illuminated by the warm light of the fire. The creature was out there, and I was sure as hell that it could see me, watching for it. Hopefully, that was enough to deter it. I kept one of the rifles nearby, just in case. The clock struck 5 a.m., and I could feel myself falling asleep. Kate came up next to me, and we both looked out into the storm.
"Why didn't you tell me?" she said.
"I don't know. I just didn't want you to have to be afraid."
"I'm a grown woman, you know."
"I know, but it tears me up inside when you're in any kind of pain."
"Do you think the creature is what you saw when you crashed the car?"
I nodded. why didn't it kill you?
I shook my head. I don't know. Secretly, I knew that it liked the toy with its victims.
Why don't you get some sleep? I'll keep watch.
I agreed. I hadn't slept much at all in the past few days. I needed the rest. Wake me up if you see anything, or hear anything. She nodded, and I kissed her on the head before finding a spot on the couch to lie down. In the darkness of sleep, I dreamt of a giant forest of massive fire trees that stood silent in the snow. Among them was a dozen or so massive footprints of some demonic creatures that dwarfed me. And within them were the tracks of the monster that stalked us, with its wide webbed toes that ended in thick claws. They were easily big enough to crush my skull. I shuddered at the thought. And just before waking up, I heard the sound again, traveling through the trees like a long song on the open air. That horrible screeching like an elk in the dead of night, tortured and brutal. I woke in a cold sweat and moved closer to the fire. The sky outside told me that it was still night, but a quick glance at the clock told me that the time was closer to midday. I relieved Kate of her duty, and she went about preparing food for the group. The stove had stopped working several days ago, and now it wouldn't light, so we all had to use the fire to warm up our food. It worked well enough. We would still have to ration, but at least we wouldn't be constantly hungry now. No new developments happened for the next few days. I heard nothing on the wind. I saw no shadows and beyond the veil of darkness. I busied myself with the radio, which I tried desperately to fix without having any technical knowledge. Some of the wires were frayed. I didn't know how to fix that. I didn't have any electrical tape. It was looking like an uphill battle, and the more I tinkered, the more the contents of the radio seemed out of place. Maybe somebody handy could slap it together easily, but I was at a loss. More than once, I got frustrated and paced around upstairs so I could be alone. Christmas Day came and passed. Nobody celebrated much. Beatrice tried to make the day special for her kids, but even at their age, they knew the holiday had been soured. They were missing a brother and a father. In the end, we all sat by the fire and watched as it wanned before adding another Yule log. Nearly a week after the storm had started, I was sitting by the window and watching for movement. Sometime in the night, I somehow fell asleep. When I woke up, the fire was smoldering. I added another log and stood to stretch my back. That's when I heard it. Scratching. The same scratching I had heard weeks earlier at the start of this hellish experience. Somewhere on the cabin wall. Before, I had thought it was a raccoon. Now my thoughts turned dark. Cautiously, without waking anyone up, I found the hunting rifle and slid the back door open. We had managed to dig a path through the snow from the exit so we could get out, but pretty soon it would be an impossible task. I crawled my way up to the top of the snow and started around the house. The drift was 5 feet at this point. Without snowshoes, we weren't able to move at all. But how much longer do we have until it was impossible to leave the house at all? We'd be completely snowed in soon. Already, the cabin had a thick layer of snow on it that I wasn't sure if it had been built to handle. Eventually, we would have to climb out the upstairs windows to get out. I stepped through the fresh snow and saw that it was still outside. No wind, no snowfall. My breathing seemed to be the loudest thing apart from the sound of fresh snow breaking under my shoes. Whatever was crawling at the house had already heard me. I rounded the side of the house and saw nothing. Of course I did. Whatever this creature was, it was probably inside the walls already. Some raccoon, or it was buried beneath a crust's worth of frozen water and trying to hollow its burrow some more. I signed and shone the light around. Despite the bright reflective snow, the sky was dark enough to make anything outside of my flashlight beam disappear instantly. Anything could be out there. I turned the head back inside but stopped when I noticed something peculiar. I had noticed it before because the white snow and the darkness made it blend in. It was a hole. A hole dug along the side of the house towards the spot where the scratching had been. I took a couple of more hesitant steps and peered into it. The hole was big, too big for anything that would feasibly create it. How long had this been here? Judging by how little snow was inside, I guessed that it was constantly being tended to. At the bottom of the hole, I could see the base of the house. The paneling had been clawed away, exposing the insulation and the pipes in certain places. But it wasn't right. Something wasn't right. It was surface-level scratches, not something that was trying to get inside. Insulation had been torn out, too, and that was going to be a whole other problem now, being close to the warmest room in the house. I was going to have to patch this thing up. I stood and looked around. That was going to take me several minutes at least. I dreaded the idea of it. Why gouge out the side of the house like this? In my mind, it was the creature that did it. What else could have dug that hole? The hairs on my neck perked up. I swung the light around behind me, illuminating the tree line some 50 feet away. Instantly, my chest tightened up, and I struggled to move at all. There it was. Two eyes gleaming in the light of my torch. They shifted in the dark, looking directly at me. And in the silence, I could hear a deep huffing sound like breathing or grunting that made my spine twitch. It wanted me to come out there. It wasn't trying to get inside at all. I held my breath and took a step towards the house. It didn't move. I took another, and it bolted towards me. I wasn't far from the door. I dove into the snow and pulled it open, spilling powder as I did. Then it slid closed, leaving me panting on the floor covered in the stuff. Outside, I had dropped the flashlight, and in its shadow, I could see the creature towering just behind it. I climbed to my feet and watched as it approached the window. My throat seized up. This was it. This was the end for us. I could see clearly now that the monster dwarfed me. It could easily smash the glass end with one swipe. From the light of the fireplace spilling out into the darkness, it was easy to notice that it was at least 8 or 9 feet tall, with impossibly long and muscular front legs that it used to stand in the snow. Each one was as tall as me, and probably weighed enough to be placed in my wrestling weight category. Its shoulders and neck were strong too, like a bison or buffalo or bear. The spine was long and curved downward steeply, eventually ending in two legs about half as long as the front, but with backwards knees. Along the shoulders, chest, and down the back was long and thick dark fur. The rest of the body's hair was shorter, but just as thick. The head of the monster was what immediately caught all attention. It was massive, supported by its bulking structure. The closest thing I could describe to it is a deer skull, with a long pointed snout and teeth set in to make it look like it was constantly grimacing. It had two massive hulking antlers as well, but the skin was too close to the bone, like it was stretched unnaturally, like a balloon about to burst. Its eyes were large and deep set, and I could see that they were pitch black but glazing over with white, almost like it was blind. But it wasn't. Every now and again the light caught the white patches in its eyes as it stared through the glass at me, reflecting the light as if it was a cat. It stood there, breathing heavily so that I could hear the grunting through the window. I could sense the intelligence inside of it, and understanding that I was afraid that my heart was climbing into my mouth, and I wouldn't be able to do anything to stop the thing if it decided that it wanted to break down the window. The rest of the group slept, ignorant of the horror that was right outside. I saw it turn its head and twitch its eyes between each sleeping occupant, teeth still grimacing like a rotten corpse's would. Hot breath spilled out between its black gums, and it was close enough to the window now that I saw the glass fog up a little. I didn't know what to do. I stood hopeless, shaking like a leaf as this thing watched the group, probably assessing whether or not it wanted to kill us now. Its eyes moved to Beatrice, then to Aya, to Grace, the Griffith girls, and then landed on Kate, closest to the window and within snapping distance of its massive jaws. My stomach twisted in on itself as I saw Kate's helpless body being sized up by this unholy abomination. Instinctively, I screamed at it and waved my arms. It looked at me. The gun. I needed the gun. I looked around for where I had left it. Behind me, Grace was waking up, trying to figure out why I was screaming. Beatrice's eyes fluttered open as well, but it was too late. I could see the monster slicking back into the shadows again, disappearing completely from view.
"What? What is it?"
Grace said, sitting upright with a twing of panic in her voice. I sat down next to the fire, breathing heavily and looking out the window. Nothing. It's gone now. "We need the board up the windows." Kate looked at the window I was staring at and stepped away from it, sitting down next to me.
"You saw it?"
I nodded. "It's clawing away at the insulation. It's trying to freeze us out." The Griffith girls stifled tears.
"What?"
Grace said, confused. "There's a hole in the wall over there," I motioned. "On the outside." The group shifted uncomfortably. The monster was getting bolder. As much as I hated the idea of not being able to see outside, the windows needed to be boarded up if we were going to protect ourselves from this thing. We gathered the boards that I had sitting in the attic from an old project and got to work nailing the windows. When we ran out of wood, we started smashing furniture and using that. In a few hours' time, we had closed up every peeping hole in the house, except for the sliding glass door. We managed to pull a bookcase in front of it, leaving a small sliver that we could peek out from into the storm. By the time that we had finished, the storm outside was already well on its way back, but I still needed to fix the hole in the wall outside. I employed Grace to hold the gun and watch my back. Inside, I found a slab of styrofoam from an old furniture set that we had bought. I stuffed as much as I could into the hole and got to work boarding it up, wind threatening to pull the flashlight from my mouth and teeth along with it. Behind me, Grace stood at the ready, watching for any movement. We managed to get the problem fixed, but I wasn't sure for how long. The creature could be back at any time and tear the house a new one easily. We made it back inside, shaking the snow off ourselves and pushing the bookcase back into place. I had to find out how to fix that radio. It was our only shot of making it out of here alive. The group sat by the fire and one by one dozed in and out of sleep once more. The perpetual darkness outside was making it hard to tell the time of day. To our bodies, it was always night. We were always tired. The time on the wall didn't matter anymore. More than once, I became frustrated at the progress I was making on the radio and stormed off to a cooler part of the house to collect my thoughts. Thinking through deep breaths of steam, I was no handyman, no electrician. I never had been. It seems like such a simple task, fixing a radio, but I still struggled to even diagnose a problem with it. More time passed. Life was stagnant, like a pool of dirty water formed from the melting of snow, unchanging. There was no other sign of the creature, thank God, but then again, we had limited viewing range from the few cracks between boarded windows, the piling snow outside, and the perpetual darkness. It could be anywhere. It seemed like it was everywhere, always just at the edge of my waking mind and always in my dreams. I could only imagine it was the same for the others, worse for poor Beatrice and Aya, who had been scared by the witnessing of the monster killing their loved ones. In fact, Aya had begun to display odd behavior. I would sometimes wake up and find her in the back door, looking through the crack and into the night. Other times, she would make dark comments about the creature, turning every conversation towards it, and making no effort to pretend like she believed that she would make it out of there alive. She ate less, engaged less, and slept less. I could tell she needed psychiatric help. What she saw happen to her father was eating away at her mind, but there was something there that disturbed me too. Something dark in her eyes, hollow, like she was looking at something on the horizon.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
For some reason, it made me feel uncomfortable, unsafe even. But then again, I wasn't in my best mental state either. I chalked it up to paranoia and did the best to watch her in case she tried to hurt herself. One night or day, while the others slept, I peeked through the back door. I heard her behind me. When I turned, I saw that her eyes were red, but not like she had been crying, like she was having some allergic reaction or from strain.
"There's no point, you know," she said.
I sighed. "As long as there are people in this house, I'm going to keep watch."
"It knows you're looking at it. It can see you."
I squinted out into the storm. I didn't find it very likely, but I believed her anyways.
"How do you know that?"
She didn't answer me.
"We're going to die in this house."
"Why do you say things like that?"
"Because it's true."
Her voice was monotone and devoid of emotion.
"What makes you think that?" "Sooner or later, it's going to want to get inside, and there's nothing stopping it from doing so."
I didn't like the way that she seemed so sure.
"Why don't you go lie down?" I said.
She didn't say anything but turned away from me and left. For the next hour, I sat in the dark and thought about what she had said. Sometime later that night, I heard her again, talking to herself, talking in her sleep.
"Cold flame," she said, "drenched in a pale odor, drenched in blood, like the swing of the cosmos on high, in the deepests of the trees beyond the grave of life, hunger, the white eyes of deity, clinging like lechen to your chest, fear. Is that in that pale odor comes the tang of death, the warmth of blood on snow, in the trees of deity, ancient, malevolent, in the trees a beast, growing, growling, preying on you."
I shuddered. That girl was seriously disturbed. We needed to get out of here and get her help. More time passed and the storm never seemed to cease. No new developments came with the radio, and I resisted the urge to smash it out of anger. Eventually, the wind did seem to die down,
But the storm didn't stop. It was enough to be able to move outside, though. Like an eye of the hurricane, I took the opportunity to pull the group together and explain our situation.
"I don't understand," Gray said. "You just want us to go out there?"
"Yes," I explained. "In two groups."
"Why?"
"We need firewood, before the snow gets too high and we become trapped in here."
"What's wrong with the wood that we have?"
"It's fine, but I want to get more. In case the storms last longer into the season, we might run out if that happens."
"But I thought that you had that radio. We're not staying here all winter."
"No," I sighed. "But we need to be prepared for all possibilities. I don't know if I could fix it." I could tell Grace was upset with me.
"I don't understand what's so hard about it. David would be able to fix it."
I rubbed the bridge of my nose.
"I'm not David." "Clearly."
"I think," Kate bumped in, "we should focus on surviving. Nobody's wanting anything bad to happen, but..."
"Oh, you're just glad that your husband is still alive," Grace said, eyes wet.
"Excuse me?"
"Oh, don't play dumb. We all know you volunteered Dave so you could stay here." She snarled at me.
"You think I volunteered him?" I shouted. "David chose to go. He gave his life to protect you. And look at you, unharmed."
"We could know that this would happen," Kate said, trying to douse the flame.
"You should have been there," Grace continued, getting more emotional. "He wouldn't be dead if you had gone with them. Aya wouldn't have seen her father die."
I could feel my chest getting hot.
"And what? Just let the thing get in here? Kill you instead?"
"You don't seem to have a problem leaving us here when Kate was with you."
I clenched my jaw. "What is that supposed to mean?"
"You don't care about any of us. You only care about her."
"Bullcrap. I let you into my house. I risked our lives getting your daughter back here."
"Stop it," Beatrice squealed from the couch. She was crying. "Please, stop it."
I realized I was heaving in anger. Grace was doing the same with tears in her eyes. I looked to Kate, who had a concerned look on her eyebrows.
"It's poisoned you all,"
Aya spoke. We all looked at her. She was standing by the fire and staring into it.
"What?" Kate asked. "Look deeply and you will find the stench of the beast in your minds."
"Oh, Aya, honey," Grace sniffled. "Please sit down. You're scaring me."
Aya turned and looked at us.
"The beast is hungry."
"Aya," Grace scolded. "Stop. Sit down."
"Why?"
"Please. You don't know what you're saying.
You bicker and you fight, and soon you'll turn on each other like animals."
"I think we all have a bad case of cabin fever," I said. She looked at me, through me.
"You've seen it. You know the wee Sulken is here, in this room."
My heart pounded in my chest. "The what?"
"Aya,"
Grace shrieked. I had turned and walked to the peephole by the back door, staring out into the dark storm again.
She is going through some kind of psychosis, I made up.
"Excuse me," Grace said.
"She needs help," I told her. "We need to get her help."
"She's just frightened. What we need to do is get out of here."
"Frightened? Jeez, oh, Grace. That girl watched her father get torn to pieces. You need to comfort her," I yelled. Grace stifled tears. In the bathroom, I could hear Beatrice's girls start to cry. Everyone could hear what I was saying. She stood to go to them.
"Let's drop it, okay?"
Kate said, putting a hand on my shoulder. I nodded. I needed a breather. Grace left for the kitchen.
"I'll make some coffee," Kate said. "I think we need a break."
She left too.
In the other room, I could hear them talking quietly to Grace and trying to comfort her, but the window moved away from her hand.
In the other room, I could see her talking quietly to Grace and trying to comfort her, but the widow moved away from her hand. I sat by the fire watching the flame slowly consume the log. There was something wrong with Aya, I knew, but I couldn't tell it wasn't just some sort of coping mechanism. She was right. There was something evil in here with us. With her. That thing, whatever she called it. It could burrow itself in your mind. I knew it because I could feel it too, worming its way into my subconscious. It was more than just paranoia, more than cabin fever. It was like I could feel it making me go mad. Pretty soon, we would all be at each other's throats. I shivered. It was cold. Very cold. Not even the heat of the fire was enough to truly drive it off. The storm grew, and we never left to get more firewood. I fumbled away at the radio, but I knew it was futile. I had tried every combination and every order and orientation. I wanted to throw it. I wanted to smash it out of frustration and anger. Even with my fingers inches away from the fire, they still were frozen. It was like trying to do neurosurgery with sausages. Meanwhile, more time passed between spats, days at first, then hours. Soon I found myself head to head with the others in the cabin at almost every single moment. I even found myself yelling at Kate sometimes. I couldn't handle the pressure of all the warm bodies, the conflicting emotions and collective fear of the monster and storm outside. I felt like crawling into the fireplace and letting it eat away at my bones and my heart. I needed to warm my mind. I could feel something cold creeping its fingers down my scalp and burrowing itself into my gray matter. I felt dizzy after standing up. I twitched when I heard the sound outside. Aya continued to deteriorate. Her eyes grew more bloodshot from lack of sleep, or maybe some immense pressure behind the skull was ready to burst through. I became actively afraid of her. More than once I woke up from a light sleep to find her standing over me, or over one of the Griffith girls or her mother, or even Kate. But the more I pushed Grace to do something, the more she built a wall around herself. Sometimes, when she thought I was asleep, Aya would speak to the walls. I could only ever catch fragments of her conversation. But whenever her lips would part at the whispering voice like cold wind came through, I shivered at the thought. No, the feeling that something was on the other side, looking for a way in. I knew it was out there too, because it constantly reminded us as it scraped away at the cabin's paneling from time to time, or howled its horrible death call in the wind. One night, I laid on my side, on the couch, watching the fire. The radio was in front of me, still busted. I hadn't even tried to fix it for several days. My mind was aching to get out of the cabin, but the only bud of hope was hopelessly wrecked. Out of boredom and desperation, I picked it up one last time and began pulling the wires from their outlets, exposing the frayed inside. I haphazardly connected the pieces together to see what, if anything, would happen. At that point, I knew I would never be able to fix it, so I figured I might as well try everything, even if it would completely destroy the thing. A spark shot from the wires and missed my finger. I threaded the copper wire together and something crackled. I blinked. Was that coming from outside? The static returned and I shot upright, still holding on to the wires in place. Shoot, that was coming from the radio. I rapidly hit the button on the top and turned the dial, hoping I could find something. My stomach twisted into knots of adrenaline. Unhooking the microphone, I brought it to my mouth. SOS, I said. SOS, we're trapped and dying. With effort, I managed to sputter out my address and waited for a response. I was met with the sound of radio static. Hello? Hello? I need emergency rescue. Anyone there? Still nothing. I hit the button some more times. The receiver squealed, picked up the sound of a low growl and short-circuited, electrocuting my hand. I dropped the radio and it smoked, now completely and utterly fried. That was it. That was our only lifeline. And now Kate and I were going to die out here. Kate was going to die because we had to go back to the cabin instead of leaving. I screamed and stomped on the broken machine. The adrenaline of hope was deformed into rage. Pieces of the radio went flying and cold tears formed at the corner of my eyes. The others woke up and Kate rushed to my side, holding my chest while I breathed. Wiping my eyes off on my arm, I looked around the room. I could see the shocked face of Grace, the confusion on Beatrice's, how scared the little girls were. Kate was concerned and sad for me. "What the hell is wrong with you?" Grace shouted. "It's frickin' broken," I spat. "Nothing. Nothing. We're all going to die here," I fumed. Grace stood over and pushed me. "We're going to die because of you. You should have gone with David. You even had a chance to make it to town when you went after him. It's all your fault, and now you've destroyed our last hope." Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Aya escort the children to the bathroom, where I assumed she had a hot bath running. I pushed Grace out of the way and kicked the radio bits some more as I walked past. "It came on," I said, "and it short-circuited. Nobody was on the other side. Face it, we're all frickin' alone out here, and that's how it's going to stay." I crouched by the fire and turned the log, still breathing heavily. Grace sat down and buried her face in her hands. Kate sat next to me and pet my back, and leaned my head against hers. We all sat in misery for the next few minutes as the wind shook the foundation of the house. We were all too tired of fighting each other. There was no point anymore. We were shells of our former selves, ghouls of skin and bone and full of icy anger at ourselves and at each other. Eventually, the group began to fall asleep again, but I remained at the fireside, staring into the flames that I had grown so accustomed to watching. It was the only source of light, the only source of warmth, and we all huddled around it, like primitive Neanderthals trying to survive something much greater than ourselves, so much bigger. We were tiny specks in the eyes of this storm, and playthings for the beast outside. Prey. We were mice being swatted by a cat. I got up and headed to the bathroom. I'd forgotten that Aya and Beatrice's little girls were in there. Aya crouched by the bathtub. Her head snapped to me, and I could see that her eyes were horribly dilated and wild, blood dripping from her teeth. "Aya, you're bleat—" I started. I didn't finish because I noticed the blood was not her own. Lying in the tub was the gutted remains of Sarah and Elizabeth Griffith, their shining organs still steaming with the heat of their bodies. Painted across the walls were the bits of suet and flesh that Aya had been devouring raw. I screamed and the monster in front of me shrieked, sending bits of the little girls flying with their crimson saliva. My heart twisted into an expression of agony as the girl pushed past me and into the hallway, leaving a trail of bright blood dripping from her clothes while the others were awakened again to the sound of the horrible wailing. Dizziness overcame me, and I doubled over, vomiting the remains of a canned food that I had eaten hours earlier. I ran through the living room, and as the others realized she was soaked in blood, they started to scream too, now all scrambling and disoriented. Grace pleaded with her to stop, but she crackled, calling out to the creature in the storm. In one swift motion, she catapulted herself over the couch and pulled the bookshelf down so that she could get to the back door. Frigid wind rushed in as she pulled it open and scrambled outside, clawing her way through the snow that had collected and out into the darkness. Grace screamed for someone to do something. I yelled back in desperation and blamed her for not watching her daughter. Meanwhile, Beatrice, who realized that her daughters were not in the living room with us, ran to the bathroom and shrieked with all the heart-wrenched agony of a mother who had just lost everything and fainted. Kate pulled herself into the corner, unsure of what to do while the screaming rang throughout the house. Grace looked between me and the open door, almost foaming at the mouth with anger. Then she turned and ran out the door after her daughter, just as undressed as she was. I closed the door behind her and locked it. Kate was over by the bathroom now, and she was retching too. I could hear her crying, and I could see her clutching her stomach. Neither one of us had any idea of what to do. Everything had gone from horrible to crazy in no time. All at once, we had lost four of our members of the house and were down to three. After Kate and I had collected ourselves some, we closed the door to the bathroom, where blood was now spilling out from under the door, and brought Beatrice to the fire. Then the two of us sat in the kitchen, still violently shaking and glancing back at the glass door, in the off chance that Aya or her mother were to come back. Neither of us knew what to do. The sudden shock of it all hung in the air like the stench of decay. In hindsight, I knew I should have been more vigilant. I could see the girl changing in front of me, but I never thought it would become this bad. I feared for my own sanity. How much longer could we last? There was only three of us left, hardly enough to defend ourselves from that horrible creature. And that's not even surveying the emotional damage that might make us all go crazy faster. After an hour or so, I finally got the nerve to try and clean the blood from under the doorway. I wedged a few towels underneath, and hoped that the bathroom would be cold enough to stop the bodies from decaying. I had no intention to ever step foot in there again. What could I even do? Scoop the poor girls into buckets and dump them in the snow? Kate tended to Beatrice as she woke up screaming. All through the night, I was painfully aware of her howling in pain as she cried until she was dehydrated. She had lost everything. First her husband, then her son, and now her daughters. As the hours went by, I became more and more afraid of what she might do to herself in her agony. I made sure to keep her attention away from the bathroom door, and Kate tried her best to make something nice to eat for the extra rations we now had. Why had Aya snapped like that? It was the monster, sure, but how? What was this thing? Something supernatural? Paranormal? I knew it wasn't natural, but where its abilities seemed to end blended with the realm of fiction. I was convinced it was at least partially responsible for Aya's psychosis, and probably wholly responsible for her violence. Who would be next? Who would the creature target and speak through the walls to? How would I know if it was me, if it was Kate, until it was too late? More days passed and the storm never ceased. It could have been weeks since it had started, or days. Time was thick and slow like molasses in January. Snow piled up past the windows and completely snowed us in, so that the only way out was through the second story. One night, I sat by the fire with Beatrice. Kate was asleep next to me, head on my lap. "Aya was right," she said at length, quietly. "We're never getting out of this."
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I wanted to tell her that she was wrong, but the words died at my lips.
"Why did this have to happen?" she continued.
I rocked my head from side to side lazily.
"Whenever I sleep, I can see it," Beatrice told me. "I could see its eyes staring into mine while it tears away at my husband and my children, and I can't do anything to stop it." A tear fell from her eye.
On top of the house, above feet of snow, I could hear something shifting. Neither of us bothered to look up. The window sighed.
"It's always out there, just waiting for us to give up. I'm thinking we should."
"No," I said. "I'm not going to give up.
As long as Kate is here with me, I'm not going to let that thing win.
I don't have anyone anymore, Milo. I'm all alone.
Her voice cracked. More movement on the house, and then a screaming shriek into the darkness.
The wee silken,
Beatrice muttered. I turned to look at her.
What? The monster.
I looked back into the flames.
In the heart of flaming rage, there burns a being of terrible age, Beatrice whispered. When the gears of time were taut in the night, there was but a naughty single voice would rise above a howling wind stripped of love.
She turned away from me and laid down to sleep. I was left alone with the feeling of hair standing on end, like someone was in the room with me. Of course, when I turned, there was nothing, but I knew I was being watched, studied, broken down to be used as fuel for some infernal fire of cold sadism. Another howl came, and I was left alone with my thoughts and the shuddering walls of the cabin. In the next few days, Beatrice continued to worsen. I saw her shudder at any noise, and she hardly ate. Her eyes grew bloodshot, and Kate and I feared she would try to hurt herself. Or worse, she might try to go outside, putting us all in danger. We took turns covertly watching her withering frame crawl closer and closer into the flame, with each passing day. Beyond Beatrice, though, I could feel my own mind consuming itself. My only source of sanity was Kate, who delicately held my consciousness on strings. When the creature scratched at the walls, or climbed on the roof, I could sense her fear and feel my own senses become overwhelmed with a desire to make the thing go away. I couldn't let it reach her. The thought of anything happening to her out here was enough to make me go mad. But the idea that she might be horribly mutilated and torn to shreds by the monster filled me with such burning nausea that I had to force myself to think about anything else. More and more, my mind seemed to turn to the sunny beaches of the Caribbean with my wife next to me. A hot sun beat down on my pale skin, while the ocean breathed a salty life on the shore. It was a dream that seemed to be slipping away the more I thought about it, the longer I stayed buried under tons of snow and anxiety. I watched one night as Kate tried to get Beatrice to eat. Her once round figure was thinning out, and I could see the concern on Kate's face.
"Please, Bea," she said softly. "Just a little bit. It can't hurt." "Not hungry. You need food."
Beatrice's hand shot and flung the fork from Kate's hand. It clattered to the floor and Beatrice hugged her knees, staring at the corner. I could hear her muttering. Kate stood and backed up, walking towards me. Beatrice's muttering grew louder and louder, a series of incoherent speech patterns and short bursts of laughter. She was losing her mind like Aya had.
"What do we do?" Kate asked, holding my shirt sleeve.
I rubbed my forehead. "I don't know. I think we need to keep her locked up."
"Are you crazy? She'll hurt herself. She'll freeze."
"Kate, she's going to hurt us if we don't do something. So help me God, I'm not going to let anything frickin' happen to you."
"We can't. She needs our help."
I sighed. "We could put her over there in the closet, and we'll give her blankets. She won't be able to do anything in there." Kate looked back and forth between the rocking woman and the door to the coat closet.
"Okay," she whispered.
Together we managed to lift Beatrice up and put her into the little space. We gave her a series of blankets and a crank lantern, along with some books to read. To my surprise, she offered no resistance. But as we moved her, I could see a sort of hatred in her eyes that made me shiver. Finally, it was just me and Kate left in the room again, huddled together by the fire like we had done countless times over countless winters. But it seems like this would be the last. I wanted to cry. I just wanted to leave. But we were trapped and beyond toyed with. The only company we had was the woman in the closet, who we fed canned food to now and again,
and the monster outside that reminded us that it was there with its screams. More time passed. It always seemed like it was passing. How long had it been since we lost the girls? Maybe just a few days, but it really felt like weeks. Every minute was agony. More and more, we started to hear Beatrice banging on the door, or could hear her talking and laughing like a mental hospital patient. When we opened the door to feed her, we saw that she had stopped cranking the lantern and was living in complete darkness. Even the books had been torn and she was huddled in the corner. It seemed like she was never sleeping. I caught a glimpse of her eye and saw that it was crimson like Aya's had been. All the time, my body felt like I was being stretched thin. I felt claustrophobic, anxious, cold. Like Beatrice, I couldn't sleep. I was afraid something was happening to me too. But worst of all was the creeping dread. The constant reminder that we were being hunted. The slow build-up to what felt like a claustrophobic climax. Like our lives were just some sick form of entertainment for this monster. It came closer to the house. It was louder. It came more often. My hair seemed to stand up at all times, like electricity was building up in the air, ready to discharge in a bolt of lightning at any moment. The worst part was that there was nothing I could do to stop it from simply breaking in and killing all of us while we slept. It all came crashing down when I heard the digging by the back door. Kate was asleep. Beatrice was silent. But there was the unmistakable sound of a monster outside, huffing mechanically as snow was shoveled out of the way. I pulled aside the bookcase to see its long arms reaching into the hole and pulling out massive chunks of powdery snow with its hands. A pit reached from the top layer all the way down to the door formed. I caught signs of its eyes as it pulled the last bit of snow out, glittering in the faint light of the house. It let out a screech that pierced through the air and made the window shudder. I winced and covered my ears and Kate snapped awake. But by the time she had made it to me, the monster had already gone. I held her back with one hand and gripped the rifle in the other, scanning the darkness for signs of movement. This was it. I was sure of it. It was going to try to get inside. Nothing moved save for the snow, being pulled by the hurricane wind. Then, tumbling into the pit, was a frozen body. It was Aya. She landed face up and I could see her grotesque face, crusted with blackened skin. Her lips were curled back, exposing her gums and teeth still red with frozen blood. Her eyelids were simply stuck open, and the look of her horribly disfigured body made me want to gag. Then she moved. I jumped backwards and Kate stood behind me, standing on her toes to look over my shoulder. Aya's body twitched, legs and arms bending ever so slightly at the frozen joints, and she climbed to her feet like a robot brought to life. Kate screamed and I held the gun up to the horrible aberration of nature in front of us. Aya's stiff fingers, still curled, reached for the handle of the door and tried to open it. Chizo! She was trying to get inside. I looked into the eyes of the ghoul. I couldn't tell if she was alive or dead. They could barely move in their sockets, but I sensed a sort of recognition in them when they saw me. If her lips weren't stuck into a permanent sneer, I swear she would have smiled. She continued to pull at the door, but it was locked. I resisted the urge to put the thing out of its misery. She was hopelessly immobile, stumbling at every jerk of the handle, fingers permanently curled and blackened. After a moment, she put her hand on the glass and tried to break it with her fist. But she was still too slow, her flesh too frozen. Kate and I backed away at the door as the sound came from the front door. A knocking. My heart was squeezing in my chest and Kate and I held each other. A short trip to the other door revealed it was Grace, body and face disfigured just as much as her daughter's, but with a sort of agonizing pain in her eyes that made me want to tear my own out. Kate whimpered. We were being surrounded by the horrible things. What would be next? David's body disappear? Joel's? The answer came from the closet door. Inside, Beatrice screamed and professed her love for the creature of the storm while she tried desperately to break free. The handle came loose and the door bursted open, revealing her withering body. Eyes so bloodshot that tears of red were actually coming from her eyes. She smiled with cracked lips and crackled before barreling towards me and Kate. I panicked and shot at the woman. The bullet hit a lamp and she launched herself over the sofa with inhuman speed. I shot again and tore a hole in the cushions. She slid into the kitchen, coming to a stop at the knives and pulled the biggest, sharpest one she could find. I screamed for Kate to get behind me as the woman charged. I shot again and it hit her in the stomach, but it only did little to stop her. She hobbled towards me still. I fired another shot, the sound making my exposed ears ring, and the bullet lodged itself in her arm. She howled in bloodlust-soaked rage, and turned to the glass door next to her, where Aya was still trying to break in. Before I could do anything, Beatrice jabbed the knife at the door and it cracked. She lifted her arm for another strike, but she was stopped when another shot went through her skull, and her sick mind became flying out the other side. Kate cowered and hid her face in my shirt. I shook as Beatrice's body collapsed, and I swear I saw it twitch still. My eyes went to face the back door, where Aya was steadily knocking at the damaged area. The spiderweb cracks grew and my stomach turned as I realized what was about to happen. The glass came down all at once and the frigid storm came blowing into the house. Aya stumbled after us, jaws agape, and I shot her four times before she fell to the ground. Now we were exposed. The snow blew into the house and the fireplace shuddered. We were going to die. Outside, the screech of the horrible monster could be heard. It was coming for us now. Upstairs! I screamed at Kate. Go upstairs! She sprinted for the staircase as the sound of a massive body hit the ground. I turned to see the beast, grinning to expose its teeth and crunching down just to fit inside. It shrieked again, like the sound of a dying deer, and scrambled after us. I fired the rest of the rounds into the monster, but it was no use. I was out of ammo. Throwing down the gun, I turned up the stairs, pushing Kate forward, and we ran into our room. The staircase behind us was destroyed by the weight of our assailant, and I could hear its heavy breathing as it tried to clamber through the hallway that was too small for it. I collapsed next to the bed and slammed the door shut. In the corner, Kate was crying and shivering. I crawled up to her and held her, crying myself. This was it. This was the end of it all. I failed to protect her. All I ever wanted was to keep her safe, and I couldn't do it. Now she was going to be killed by that thing, and there was nothing to be done. The monster dragged its claws against the door, but seemed like it couldn't break it down. The hallway was too small for it to make any great effort. It shrieked again, and with a sharp pain stabbed my eardrums. I held Kate closer, watching my breath crystallize through the blurry tears. I couldn't let her be hurt by it. She was too pure, too innocent. On her finger, I could see our wedding ring glinting in the dark. She didn't deserve this. If that thing got to us, she would suffer. She would die in agony. There was only one way out. I held Kate tighter and told her I loved her. She squeezed me back and I pulled her in more, feeling her warm body against mine. Slowly, my fingers crept her throat and I gripped her tighter, shuddering from sobs. She gasped for air but didn't fight back. All the while, my body fought me, filling me with stabbing pains of guilt and regret and love, and Kate's body went limp. I crumbled and sobbed. It was my turn now. My turn to die. I couldn't see through my misery, but I heard the door crack. It was almost here. I couldn't let it reach me. It couldn't have the satisfaction. My fingers searched the floor, the bedside table, looking for anything sharp. Nothing. There was nothing. The door splintered and the giant monster crawled inside. It stopped at my bedside, crouching to keep its muscular shoulders from grinding against the ceiling. It heaved and I wiped away the tears from my eyes as I felt a numbness now. I was going to be with Kate. Even in the dark, I swear I could see its eyes, glinting faintly at some unknown light source. Or maybe they were glowing themselves. But for a minute, neither of us moved. We just heaved, staring at each other. This was it. All this time, waiting for this. The Wysokan seemed to invade my mind. I could feel a sort of sick pleasure and a burning desire to crawl into the snow to devour the flesh of my wife, but I resisted and screamed at the thing. It sucked in several breaths in quick succession, like an animal about to sneeze, and then started to back out of the room. I screamed. I yelled. I howled at the thing to come back, but it didn't. I cried and ripped out my own hair and fell to the ground shuddering. My ringing ears played tricks on me. I could hear the air being sliced, a deep bellowing sound shaking my chest while I cried. But it didn't go away. It continued. And then I could hear muffled shouts. The window behind me shattered and the room was flooded by electric light. The barricades were torn apart, and I was lifted by the living hands of humans and taken out into the snow. Half awake, I saw that the storm was gone somehow. There were people. There was a helicopter hovering above the house, now almost completely snowed in. The radio had sent out my distress call after all. The whole time, I had thought nobody was coming. In my heart, I felt the pain of the horrible realization that I was going to live and that Kate was dead. Kate was dead because I killed her. And now I was being lifted into a helicopter. I wanted to be down there. I wanted to be dead instead of her. I tried to scream and cry and resist, but I couldn't. I wanted to tell them to leave me, but they wouldn't. And I saw the snow below us fall away, taking the cabin with it, smoke still sputtering from the chimney, leaving behind the only person I ever loved, dead. And freezing in that horrible frickin' cabin.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. We're your destination for electrical products. Keep yourself safe and protected with new GFCI outlets from Legrand. They're available in a variety of finishes. Now at Menards, save big on all Legrand outlets and dimmer switches. View our entire selection of Legrand products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. We're your destination for electrical products. Keep yourself safe and protected with new GFCI outlets from Legrand. They're available in a variety of finishes. Now at Menards, save big on all Legrand outlets and dimmer switches. View our entire selection of Legrand products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week.
Save big.